Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to The Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia El-Khoury.
And I'm Cathy Weston. A very warm welcome tonight, folks. We are talking this evening about private education, independent schooling versus state education. Talking to Patrick Atkinson, who's our first guest tonight. He is the head teacher of Beechwood Park School, very familiar to all of us living in Hertfordshire. And for the state perspective then, we'll be speaking to Martin Post, who's the head teacher of Watford Boys Grammar School. And lastly, Lydia, we'll be rounding up the discussion with our friend Anna Pedroza, an educational consultant and fellow parent, who'll be talking us through some of the issues that get raised tonight and hopefully moving us towards some concrete conclusions.
Great. And to start off the show, we want to maximise as much time with our guests this evening. So we're going to jump straight into our first conversation with Patrick Atkinson, who's in the studio with us now. Thank you for joining us, Patrick.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and good evening to all your listeners and parents out there.
Well, we were just saying it's such a thrill to have a head teacher here, because parents don't often have access to people in your position, and to hear you talk at length.
Yes, I recognise that sometimes we can seem a bit remote, but I hope certainly that my parents at Beechwood feel that I'm available and for them to talk to when they want to talk about their child's education, which is very, very important to them, as it is to all parents.
Absolutely.
Now, Beechwood Park is an independent school, so we're talking tonight about the big difference between that and the state provision. Talk us through, what is the basic difference or differences, what are the basic differences between the state and an independent education?
Well, it's sort of what it says on the tin, really. I mean, an independent school is a school that is not controlled or affected by local government or central government matters. Mm-hmm. It's able to devise its own curriculum, set its own ethos, it has its own board of governors, it can provide a very broad curriculum, it is able to charge a fee, it can give places to children that are free, it can give bursaries to children, and in fact in the independent sector I think there is more than 30% of its pupils who are receiving assistance with the fees that the schools charge.
And it's when I was doing the research for this show, I think one of the myths perhaps of the independent sector is that the parents are often very, very wealthy, when in actual fact I noted a study this week saying a lot of parents are on a sort of a joint salary of £60,000 who are actually sending their children. So parents are actually making quite a lot of sacrifices.
Indeed they do. And I would say that in the independent sector as a whole, you have a very wide mix of social groups and also cultural groups, and lots of parents, yes, you're absolutely right, are making significant sacrifices in order to be able to afford to send their child to that independent school. But it's very interesting that we see from the research that sort of 6 out of 10 parents, if money were not an issue, would send their child to an independent school if they had that choice. So there's massive support for the provision of an independent sector within the educational provision in the country as a whole out there. And I think, again, more or less the same proportion of parents support the idea that the country has an independent sector within the educational provision that it provides.
And certainly there is so much, isn't there, Lydia, so much choice in terms of educational establishment and type of school that we can send our children to. We were just talking earlier about free schools.
That's it. And nearly the choice is overwhelming. I mean, certain schools like Beechwood Park have a reputation that speaks for itself. But there is such a huge choice. It's hard to kind of narrow it down for parents and make that decision. Can we talk to you specifically, Patrick, about some of the things that we parents hear are the differences? Like, one thing that we always hear are the difference between state and private is class numbers. Are numbers smaller? Does it make a difference?
I would say yes, most certainly they are. Class sizes are smaller and it does make a difference. And one of the things that we know about the reason why parents choose independent education, high standards, class size is important, and discipline. And for me, there's a very distinct relationship between class size and discipline. Independent schools are not full of teachers who are authoritarian, who go around wagging their fingers at the children. The reason the discipline is good is because the class sizes are small. In those classes, you get high pupil engagement. The children are focused on the lesson and on their learning. They get more individual attention, and so they are really enthusiastic and excited about their learning. And of course, discipline isn't a problem in those situations. Of course, there are children who come to school with emotional and behavioural difficulties, that we understand. And they can be a real challenge in the classroom, and teachers and the children need support at those times and with those issues. But apart from that, by and large, poor discipline in the classroom stems from a lack of engagement of the children with what is going on with the learning that the teacher is trying to engage them with. So for me, that is absolutely fundamental. The smaller the class sizes, the better the levels of engagement, and therefore the better the learning that can happen.
And certainly there seems to be, I don't know if you'd agree, Patrick, in the research evidence, a big difference between less than 15 children in the class and over 20, over 25. So can we just talk about that for a little bit with parents?
Absolutely. I think that again, a lot of the research sort of tends to suggest that class size doesn't make a difference. But that research has been about the difference between 35 and 25. When we see the differences kicking in are around that 15 and 20 mark. And for young children, I think it is particularly important, you know, that it is at that age that they are like sponges, and they really respond to the attention that they can get from a teacher who can find the right method to help them to learn. And so if you're in a smaller class, then you are going to make better progress, and you're going to get a really good start in your education.
And I think that's actually a question parents often discuss, isn't it? If I can only pay for one part of their education, which part? So that's quite interesting that perhaps earlier on the better.
Well, one of the things that I would say about affordability is that recognising that independent education is expensive, and I'm not going to deny that. As we said, parents are prepared to make sacrifices, and many, many do. A parent should also say to themselves, right, well, you know, I feel that I've got this amount of finance available. It's not going to fund the child through their entire education in the independent sector. Where do I best spend it? Where can it have the most effect? And you're absolutely right. When those children are young, you can really get them off to a good start, and that can carry them through into their secondary education, which may then be in the maintained sector. But they have got a really good foundation in their literacy and their numeracy. They're really excited about the idea of learning. They want to learn. They've got good habits, good attitudes. And that actually carries them through.
That will
see them to high achievement at A levels and going into university, or if they don't do that, it will enable them to have a sense of who they are and what they want to do with their lives.
It makes so much sense when you say it. But I have to say, before I had this conversation with you, if I was analysing myself, I'd kind of think, oh, well, like, make sure they get the best A levels that they can, so put it in towards the end. So that's interesting. You say early on is the best time to invest.
Oh, absolutely. Because in fact, they will get the best A levels they can if they've got
the right foundation.
If they've got the right foundation, it will carry them through. I absolutely believe that. And I hear children time and time again feeding back to us and reflecting on their time in school with us and saying, you know, the reason I'm reading English at Oxford is because of something happened, you know, between the ages of 10 and 11, you know, 9 and 10, 7 and 8, whatever it may be. You know, it was something that happened that was critical for them then. So it really has a powerful effect.
That's really good for parents to know.
And I think reflecting on your own education, your primary school was a time of such lovely memories, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas secondary school is fraught with all sorts of difficulties. But I think I just want to return to the class size issue. One of the things, a disadvantage perhaps that we've been thinking about, if there's, say, 10 children in a class, sounds fabulous, but what about social diversity? Having friends that you may not, a pool of friends that you can develop friendships with, it's quite small in that regard, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. And if you're teaching a class that is that small, it's a different type of teaching methodology that you use. And you don't. And the other thing that I would say about classes that are very small indeed, and they may be, you know, in the independent sector, you can have classes of 3, 4, 5, 6 children, and they're very small groups. The children who are in those classes need those small classes because they're getting, largely speaking, very individual attention. What you lose in a class like that is all that variety, that richness of input, you know, what children bring from their different backgrounds, their different experiences, into that educative sort of atmosphere. So it is very different, but it is, I would say, certainly rare, if not impossible, that a child would only be taught in a small class like that for the entire of their experience in the school day. That may be for a particular setted lesson, but there will be other larger groups that they will be part of, certainly for PE and games and those sorts of things. And of course, there's a massive amount of learning and socialising that goes on in their break times and their lunch times, in their other activities that they will be engaged with, which I think are only a critical part of what a school can offer. Is, you know, the curriculum beyond the classroom, the co-curriculum as it's now called, it used to be called extracurricular, whatever you want to call it, it's the things that they do outside timetable time, which again give so much to their education, enable them to find out, as I've said, who they are, what they're good at, what they enjoy doing, and that builds their self-esteem, and also it builds their enjoyment of school, and it's one of the things that makes them want to come to school. If you've got children who want to come to school, I mean, you know, the job's done, really.
Yeah, you're doing something right. There's no doubt about it. My hesitation with independent schools is that quite often they're dislocated from communities. They tend to be out in places on their own, which means after school, you know, quite often children go off to disparate places and they don't have a sense of community outside school, or they have, like, you can't kind of pop in for tea to a friend's house on the way home, which I see as a bit of a disadvantage.
Lots of parents ask me about that, and I'm aware of the things that parents do to compensate for that, and it's certainly true. I would observe that children, if you're sending your child to an independent school, it's quite likely that you're going to be driving them round to see their friends rather more than you would if you went to a local school, because they would be able to get out on the bike and go and visit them and that sort of thing. And so that is certainly the case. And the way that parents deal with that is to enroll them in local clubs and societies and those sorts of things. And it is that can be a very good way of compensating for that. And there are other sort of social groups that also that the family can belong to, such as the local church, if it may be something like that, or the youth club, those sorts of local societies and clubs, so that can, you know, help the child create a local friendship group perhaps that's not attached to school.
A completely different one that's on your doorstep. Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Can I jump on to the subject of teachers? Because when you were describing, you said that teaching methodology changes when you've got 15 or less students in the class. How does it, I mean, how do you choose your teachers? How, like, what is the factors that you look for when you're picking them? Because I think they must be the glue. They're the most important thing. And when you say if there's 30 in a class, somebody who can manage to 30 people must be a fantastic teacher and an excellent disciplinarian. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the quality of teaching is absolutely critical. McKinsey report makes it quite clear that, you know, any education system can only be as good as the teachers that are working in it. And so, for me, that whole idea drives me to feel that we need to attract the most talented, best educated people into our teaching profession. Because if you are going to educate and develop the next generation, and they are going to be the critical part of your successful society and your successful economy in a nation, then really you should only give them the best. Right? That is absolutely paramount. So I'm looking for able people, well-educated people. I'm looking for people who are reflective, who are open, who have a passion for learning themselves and can convey that passion to their pupils, and they know how to do it. I'm looking for people who are really interested in cause and effect. Right, I have a pupil here, I have a group of pupils here, and how can I best get them to learn this, to develop this skill? What method do I need to use? And so they are people who are really passionate about developing an array of skills that they can employ, that they can play, if you like, in response to the group of children that they have in front of them. And of course, that group will be, however you may arrange it, even if you stream or set, it will be a mixed ability group. All human groups are. And they will have different learning styles, different ways of thinking. And a teacher is somebody who is really, you know, an excellent teacher is somebody who really engages with how do you get these different types of young people to learn and to develop these skills and to be excited about learning. So, you know, they've got to have all those things, and they've got to be prepared to work very hard too.
And certainly parents, I think, investing, you know, $3,500 a term or whatever it is in private education, they're buying, they think, a higher quality of teaching. Now, I think it comes as a shock to parents to find out that you don't actually have to have a PGCE to teach in an independent school, which is the normal certificate of education, a normal route that a teacher would go down. But equally, is it the case, you know, how would you respond to that firstly? But also,
my first response would be that teaching and the ability to be an excellent teacher is not determined necessarily by a formal teacher training. There is absolutely no doubt that a formal teacher training can help, but the qualities that I have just described can be in a person regardless of having done a teacher training. What I do think is important, and I think it is critical in developing a talented teaching profession, is that all teachers engage in a proper program of continual professional development. So that person who has this passion for learning themselves and for teaching, who has a passion for their subject, is reflective and open. If they go on in-service training and those sorts of things, they can develop into excellent teachers.
And in fact, we had David Weston from the Teacher Development Trust on the show a few weeks ago, and he was saying that what is absolutely fundamental to the quality of teaching is the extent of continuing professional development that schools invest in for their staff. So I think that's something parents don't always consider or think about, but it's a good question when you're going around in those open days. How do you invest in your staff? What sort of leadership do you show? Because I think it's not something parents would put together with the quality of teaching.
Absolutely not. I mean, it's such a minefield for parents. So, you know, I don't think it's something that's on the tip of parents' tongues, you know, so it's great
it's
for that
really
to be flagged.
It's a really good question to ask.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam. Your place, your voice, your music. Now, we've been speaking to Patrick Atkinson, head teacher of Beechwood Park School. And now for the state perspective, we're going to speak to Martin Post, who is the head teacher at Watford Boys Grammar. He's on the line now. Martin, thanks for joining us this evening.
No problem, Lydia. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, Martin. How are you?
I'm fine.
Now, Martin, you've obviously heard the discussion tonight. We've been listening to the sort of the pros and cons, if you like, of independent education. And I suppose the key question for us parents at this point in the chat is, you know, why? Surely great teaching happens in state schools as well. We're still trying to work out the added value of paying for education.
I must confess I've not heard much of the discussion tonight because I've only just come in from work myself.
Okay.
So I apologise if I repeat anything. There's no doubt in my mind, I've been a teacher now for 30 years, and there's no doubt in my mind that the quality of teaching in the state sector has never been better. The quality of young teachers coming into the profession is absolutely outstanding. And I think it's quite interesting that I lose some of my staff every year to the independent sector because they will make offers to them that I can't make. And I think that in itself is a tribute to the quality of the teachers that we have in the state sector.
I have to say, you know, today teachers have been striking all over the country, which is difficult, puts parents in a very difficult position.
Yeah.
on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And we hear about a lot of demoralisation in the state sector. We hear about lots of disgruntlement with government.
Mm.
You know, I think it does worry us. We feel, especially where we live in Harpenden here in St Albans area, you know, our schools are oversubscribed. We're worried about 32 children plus in a class. How would you sort of alleviate our anxiety over those issues?
Well, I'd say that this particular area, I mean, this area of South and West Hertfordshire probably has some of the most outstanding schools in the country concentrated into a very, very small area. And that's both state and independent schools. I mean, I have to say that the quality of many of the schools in this area is truly outstanding. I think that you are absolutely right to say that class sizes in the independent sector may be smaller. I mean, if you're paying £15,000 or £20,000 a year for your child to be educated, you have to bear in mind that I will receive for each of the children in my school somewhere around £4,000 to £5,000. For their individual education. So I would expect, if I was paying that kind of money, that class sizes would be smaller. In fact, the thing that actually quite surprises me is that schools in the state sector manage to achieve what they do achieve, some truly outstanding results, with that kind of financial inequality.
I have to say, Watford Boys, we're cheating a little bit tonight because it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, you send students to Oxbridge every year, don't you?
We do.
And how do you do it?
How do you manage
on that budget?
We're not the only. I could name a number of schools. I'm going to name one in the St Albans area, which we've worked with closely, which is Verulam School. They're sending more students to Oxbridge now than they have done for years, and I know that the head teacher there is aiming to send more to Oxbridge. I mean, I have to say that also the focus on Oxbridge can be a little misleading. I mean, we tend to talk about Russell Group universities. We tend to talk about the top 13 universities in the country. What we do is we talk to the boys who come into the school. The very first assembly I give to them is about going to university. And I think that I still remember what it was like to be the only person in my family who had ever been to university. And I remember what it was like arriving at university and thinking, well, so what happens now? And I'm determined that's not going to happen to any of our boys. You know, we talk to them about universities. We lift the lid on their aspirations. I mean, we try to make sure that they have the opportunities. And there is no doubt about it, at the top end, getting to these top universities, I mean, our boys and the girls from the girls' grammar school are a match for anybody from the independent sector.
Just recently, the head of New Harris Westminster Sixth Form, James Hanscom, was quoted to say in the Evening Standard saying that state schools are failing to get into elite unis because sixth forms are not setting their intellect on fire. How do you feel about that?
That's a very challenging statement.
I think the general gist in the media, I feel, has been that can we rely upon state schools to be aspirational? I mean, you've already answered that because you're saying in your particular school the culture is that you start from the very beginning and aim high.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, and also you try not to accept the baggage that sometimes students come with. You know, even at the age of 10 or 11, there's stereotyping that goes on in a family. You know, you can't do that. You're not as good as your brother. You'll never be able to manage that. There's a kind of stereotyping that can go on in schools. Inevitably, you know, there's a kind of a lid that can be put on aspirations, and I think that's the thing that we do have to lift off. I mean, I think unimaginative teaching in the sixth form, to go back to that. We have a duty to make sure that students pass exams. I mean, particularly the A-levels are clearly still an exam that has great status. And we are giving students access to what is, bear in mind, the second best university system in the world. It's only behind the United States of America, and I would argue it's only there because of lack of financial investment. So schools like mine, where you know we're sending something like 75% of the students to Russell Group universities out of any particular cohort, we're feeding one of the top university system in Europe. I mean, so the exams are important, and if the exams don't fire the imagination, then it's up to the teachers to do it. But it's also clear that we've got to keep a focus on those examinations because those are the key things. However, I believe that when a student comes into my school, we're talking about a 10-year project. I mean, I wish that schools were kind of measured against the kind of range of measures and metrics that are used at university. I mean, I think that I've got a responsibility for how well they do in their first degree, because they've got to be able to go away from home, be an independent learner, be enthused by their subject, want to be at university when they go there. And I think that's absolutely critical, and we've got a responsibility for that. And I think that actually a focus on really rather mundane targets sometimes is distracting, really rather limiting in itself.
Yeah, and it's inspirational to hear you talk like that, Martin, about it, because obviously everybody wants to have faith in the state system as well, in case you don't have the resources or can't find the resources to turn to independent schools. So it's just fantastic to hear what you're saying as a parent. Now, Michael Gove is pushing, this touches back to something you mentioned earlier, Michael Gove is pushing independent schools helping state schools or partnerships between them. Does this happen enough? Does it work?
It's difficult to say. I mean, I really value the fact that some of our greatest competition, I mean, you know, working certainly in the Watford area, some of our greatest competition is from some of the top independent schools in the country. And one of the great things is that I don't think we've got anything to fear from them. But I think the fact that they are so good keeps us on our toes, means that we are always looking to improve.
And
we're
vice versa.
Looking to improve. Do independent schools do enough? I mean, this is a very complicated area.
Well, Patrick's sitting here dying
status.
To butt in, Martin. So Patrick Atkinson sitting here with us.
Good evening, Martin.
Hello there.
Listening
Hi.
In. So we're talking about the partnership. Beechwood Park, does it partner up with any state schools, or is it interested in that kind
we
of
We don't have any formal programmes, but we do have links with local primary schools in the St Albans area, and we share training at times, and also the pupils attend sort of events, fixtures and that sort of thing. So there are definitely links, and we're definitely very interested in pursuing that. Also, we are available, our facilities are available for the local community if they wish to use them. So.
Now, obviously, Patrick, you are the head of a primary school, Martin's the head of a secondary school. Martin, to what extent are you having children enter Watford Boys who've been in the private sector, in the independent sector?
We do get boys who've been in the independent sector, and I think this is one of the things that actually can keep students in the independent sector is that... there's a kind of fear of moving out of it. My son spent a year, an excellent year, between the ages of 4 and 5 in an independent school because we couldn't get appropriate nursery provision for him. And I remember taking him out of there and putting him into a state primary school, which we always intended to do. And honestly, the reaction of the parents who remained in the independent sector, they were aghast that I could possibly do something that was depriving my child of the outstanding education that the school was providing. And I feel that there is a certain they get slightly stuck, so they can't necessarily see that the independent sector provides a good education, but so can the state sector.
And I think, as you've pointed out, there's social pressure, you know, to stay within it. There might be sort of an implication there that, you know, you feel under pressure to remain. And I think Patrick made the point earlier as well that it might be a good idea, if you can't afford the whole stretch, to invest in independent education perhaps earlier on.
The problem is, though, a lot of independent schools, a lot of prep schools, still put quite a lot of pressure on to stay in the independent sector until the child is 13.
Yeah.
And of course that means they've missed secondary transfer. And I certainly know that some parents have talked to me about the fact that, you know, the head teachers of some of the independent schools really do not want their children to leave at 11. Mm. They want them to stay on until they're 13. I mean, I'm quite interested to the whole issue about the independent sector helping state schools as well. It's quite interesting to put into the debate the fact that as an academy, we are required by our funding agreement to support other schools. So we actively, we're a national support school, and we actively engage in school-to-school support with, I mean, we're working with one local school at the moment. We've got my deputy head teacher is supporting another one. We are really actively engaged in trying to raise the quality of education, state education, throughout the community. And I feel that actually the independent sector should be rising to that challenge themselves and actually committing themselves, as we are committed to doing that kind of thing, by a legal agreement.
Hmm. Patrick, do you want to come back on that point?
Well, I will, certainly. The fact of the matter is that quite a number of independent schools do support local academies and have been a part of setting them up. I'm not quite sure that the obligation is the way to actually encourage that sort of exchange, although I don't disagree with Martin that the exchange, in fact, I agree strongly that the exchange is very important and very, very useful, and the two sectors working together and sharing the responsibility for educating the young people of this country is really what we should all be engaged with. And if I could just come back on Martin's point about the 13 plus leave, which is largely speaking to do with boys in prep schools, mine's a co-ed school, but largely speaking the boys will remain with the 13, and of course he's running a boys' grammar school. Is the reason that we are enthusiastic about them staying on to 13, and I would hate anybody to think that I'd actually, you know, made it difficult for them to leave at 11, other than to point out what I consider to be the persuasive arguments, is that for boys' development, in many ways, the 13-plus transfer is a very good one and works very well. And there's quite a lot of evidence to support that. So I would be very interested in discussions with local state schools about there being the opportunity for boys, and indeed girls too, to join their schools at 13, which is in many ways a very good time developmentally for them to make that transfer.
We have a question for both you and Patrick. We've talked a lot tonight about the different provision and the importance of quality of teaching and all the rest of it. Something I think is an important point to bring up is the role of parental engagement in how well your children are doing in school. And I'm sure it's something both of you would agree with. Can you sort of say to what extent parental engagement matters in both of your schools? But also a big issue for parents in state provision is that the felt need to pay for private tuition and to compensate for the fact their children aren't in independent schools. So I don't know how we're going to manage the conversation, but what are your views on that, Patrick, first?
Well, I think, and I don't think this will be a surprise to anybody, that parental engagement is critical, and we have high levels of parental engagement in the independent sector, and what has, I think, very clear from research, and indeed I think it's sort of featuring in the media at the moment, is that in terms of predicting outcomes, educational outcomes for children and their economic success and happiness, and those two not necessarily related, don't get me wrong, but in later life, is very much to do with the enthusiasm, the support that the parent gives to their child's education, which is probably determined by their own experience of education. Now, that may not mean that those parents are necessarily in one of the higher, if you like, social groups or socioeconomic groups, but the research shows that in fact, parental engagement can compensate for a poorer background to a very significant degree. So it is absolutely critical what the attitude of parents at home, what they say to their children about school, what they say to the children about the way they should treat their teachers. I mean, it's really, really important.
Critical. Back to you, Martin.
I would agree completely with that. I mean, parental engagement is probably the most important thing, and I think the parents are crucial to this, because one of the issues that you have, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the media at the moment about the education system in the Far East with the extreme amounts of coaching that we always knew went on in places like Singapore, but it's apparently permeating the Chinese system, the South Korean system now, and I have to say that you can understand parental anxiety, that you want to do the best that you possibly can for your child, and if that means, you know, sometimes, as we know, what parents construe that to be is that you throw money at them. Actually, it's about books, it's about talking to them, it's about engagement with the child, it's about having good manners. It's about just spending time with them is the critical thing. And I think that in time-poor families, clearly sometimes, you know, money, coaching, whatever, might be a bit of a substitute for that stuff that really does take the time and does demand the effort from a parent, which is engagement with their children.
Thank you so much, Martin. Unfortunately, Martin, Patrick, we would love to continue this conversation.
We certainly would.
But
we
have
another guest. I'm really sorry. But thank you both very, very much.
Patrick's going to stay with us. But thank you so much, Martin.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Martin.
All the best.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. It's your place, your voice and your music. Now, just to round up the discussion, we're joined by Anna Pedroza on the line now.
Hi there.
Hi, Anna.
Thanks
Hi.
For joining
Good
us
evening,
this evening.
Anna.
Hi, Patrick.
Now, Anna, tell us a little bit about what you've heard this evening, the conversation between Patrick and Martin about state versus private. Can you share your thoughts? What comes to your mind about what you've heard?
I think it's been a really interesting discussion. I really hope that it's helped a lot of parents across West Hertfordshire. I think one of the key points that seemed to come out from the whole discussion is as parents, we shouldn't be making assumptions about either sector. I think we can be surprised by both. And it's worth as parents actually visiting and talking to schools, a great variety of schools, before making decisions. So I think that's one key thing. And something that you did also touch on was the variety of schools, even in the state sector now that we have academies and free schools as well as more traditional schools. So for parents, I think it's really important to do the research. And I think the other thing that sort of really struck me was that the point about when you send your child to, if you're able to, when you might send your child to the independent sector. I was very interested in Patrick's point about the fact that actually a start in the independent sector can really provide a child with a good foundation, and that can be a useful option for parents where budgets are tight.
I found that very valuable as well. I think that's the thing that's probably stuck with me most, to get your child on course as early as possible is the right strategy.
And also the attitude to learning is fundamental for all of these children, that they, as we know, if something goes wrong and they feel frightened of school or they're not enjoying it, learning, it's critical, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other point that kept coming into my mind as I was listening to the discussions was the fact that obviously we know that for many parents in West Hertfordshire, the states that the independent sector isn't an option. It's a very small part of the education picture in England. So 6 to 7% of students attend that area, and for many parents on a lower income, it's not an option. And I think that one of the things we should be considering more, and I think that some of the points that your second interviewer, Martin, made were good, was how do we take some of the successes and some of the interesting things that are happening in the independent sector and bring those into the state sector so that all parents can benefit from them?
I would absolutely agree with that. As I said to Martin, I think that the cooperation between the two sectors is what creating a really effective education system in this country is all about. And one of my interests in working in the independent sector is what we can learn from the work of teachers in the maintained sector and what they can learn from us. Because as I said, when I think we were talking about what qualities should excellent teachers have, that openness and that desire to learn and to exchange information and ideas and explore ideas is absolutely fundamental to making a teaching profession that is fit for purpose.
Yes, I agree with you, Patrick, definitely. How much do you feel, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't be doing the interviewing here, should I? But I am very interested in the point that obviously in the independent sector you're less influenced by government policy to the same degree. And I do question at times the amount of policy changes that come into the state sector can cause disruption and distraction from the business of teaching. And I know many colleagues in teaching who just scratch their heads when another round of policy changes come and say, I wish I could just get on with the teaching.
Yes, I think it was Cathy that said to Martin that, there has been teacher strikes recently, and that we know that in some state schools, and not all by a long way, and I absolutely agree with you that we should not, we should not make generalities about either sector, and we should embrace the variety that is within both sectors, and therefore the variety that jointly they provide. Because, for children, that's absolutely critical. There's no such thing as an average child. They all come with their own sort of little bag of potential and their different characteristics. And really we need to find, or to help parents to find, schools which are going to match the needs of their children as they grow and develop. But getting back to the question of the demoralisation in some schools, I'm sure it is to do with this continual interference in what they are doing, or all these changes, the way that they have to be measured, which is very, very simplistic, really. It's very reductionist, and it doesn't give any value to the absolutely critical things that go on in schools, in the arts and in sport and in technology, and in all the activities that schools can get involved in with the community. It doesn't recognise those at all, but actually in terms of educating the future generations, they're critical in creating a successful and happy society. Absolutely, 100% sure of that.
Thank you very much, Patrick Atkinson. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, and Anna Pedroza on the line.
Thank you.
All the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.